I've been so excited and looking forward to this series that we're starting tonight that we've called Reality Check, Shedding the Delusion of Entitlement. And I've been looking forward to it because, frankly, the issue of the entitlement mindset is so commonplace in our day. Perhaps you would agree with me at that point. And I've been looking forward to us having the chance to just get some good, clear teaching from God's Word related to this problem that has become, I think, epidemic in our culture today. And tonight, I want to start this series with a message. I want to talk to you about the fact that it's really not about you. And what I mean is that life and the purpose of it is really not about you. I don't mean that this sermon tonight is not really about you. It may well be about some of you that are sitting here, but I want to assure your paranoid tendencies that nobody, you know, called me to say, hey, could you preach a message on this for my husband here tonight or for a business partner that I know that's going to be sitting here or whatever. But it's really not about you and me. And if you've pulled out your message notes tonight, I want to read for you the anchor passage to this message for tonight that I've really built the ideas around, and it's where Jesus speaks to the crowd, and he says, now, if any of you wants to be my follower, and what he means by that is if you want to be my disciple, that's after all what the word disciple is, what it means. It means a learner, a follower of somebody who is our teacher. So Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, here are the terms of discipleship. You must turn from your selfish ways. Now, if you have your notes there, circle the word must, because when you find the word must in the Bible, it's a word of moral necessity. This is not an option. He's not saying, here's one option for you as my faith. No. If you're going to be my disciple, you must turn from your selfish ways. Take up your cross. How often?
Daily.
Notice that. And follow me. And then he gives what's really what we call a paradox. A paradox is when you state a truth and it seems like it can't be true, but it really is. Here's the paradox. If you try to hang on to your life, you'll lose it. You try to preserve it for yourself. You try to protect yourself. You try to build your life around you and live a self-absorbed life. He said, you're going to miss what life is really all about. But he says, but if you give up your life for my sake, you'll save it. Now, G.K. Chesterton once said that a paradox is a truth standing on its head to get our attention. And Jesus is trying to say to us, get this, that when you try to make life about you, you're not really going to discover what life is about. In fact, this paradoxical statement that we've just read here, one who tries to save his life will lose it. That is the only quote from Jesus that's contained in all four of the Gospels. So obviously, Jesus said it enough that the disciples caught that paradox. They knew life wasn't about them. Now, let's talk together about entitlement. And it's good at the beginning of this series for us to identify what we mean by entitlement. In fact, if you study the literature about this, you'll notice that certain things come up over and over and over again, regardless of where you study about entitlement. So I want to highlight seven of them tonight, and I want to call attention to a book that I would highly recommend to you. It's written by a Christian psychologist named John Townsend, and it's entitled The Entitlement Cure. And I like his subtitle, Finding Success by Doing Hard Things the Right Way. And the book, by the way, has to do a lot with how entitlement plays into our work ethic. And so it's related a whole lot to the business environment, and it's really written to address people who know somebody in their life that's dealing with this entitlement mentality, and they want to try to help them out of that. And so just be aware of that if you read the book. In this series, there's a couple things we're going to lift from him, and there's some wording I especially like of how he gives these entitlement symptoms. Now, before I just click these off with you, by the way, can I just say that we need to make very clear here, entitlement isn't confined to any one age group, okay? You can find little children that live with an entitlement mentality. You can find teenagers that do. You can find young adults. You can find midlifers. You can find seniors that live with a sense of entitlement. It's like from Hot Wheels to wheelchairs, everybody can suffer from this entitlement mentality. And by the way, entitlement is not an issue related to your socioeconomic status either. You'll find there are people very poor who live with an entitlement mentality, and you'll find that there are uber wealthy people who live with a sense of entitlement. So what we're saying is, entitlement is no respecter of race or creed or gender. It is an equal opportunity infector. And God's word teaches us, watch out for the things that really characterize an entitlement mentality, though it doesn't use those exact terms. What's entitlement like? Well, write some of these things down. Number one, it's thinking we're special, unique, or exceptional. Entitled people are taken with their own self-importance, and they really feel, you know what, I'm a standout. I'm really remarkable. Now, they may have never done anything to make them remarkable, but they feel they are. To me, it's kind of characterized in this poster showing the word me-phobia. Have you heard of this? It's the fear of becoming so awesome the human race can't handle it and everyone dies. And that kind of sums up the way people with entitlement feel about themselves, that they are so awesome. Now, let me just give you a balancing statement here for a second. Because you as a human being bear the image of God, you are remarkable. And you are uniquely made by your Creator. There's no one else exactly like you because He made you with special purposes that He wants to do in your life and special plans for you that are one of a kind, okay? But catch this now. The wonder of what I just said is that He thinks of us and loves us that much. The wonder is not how wonderful you are. Do you catch the difference here? Number two, it's feeling we're owed or deserving of what we want. And people with a entitlement mentality, it's like what I want should come my way by virtue of who I am. And they can become very impatient and intolerant if you don't deliver it the way they want it. It's almost like, what's wrong with you that you're not willing to give me what I want, the way I want it, when I want it? Shame on you. Number three, an unwillingness, even a refusal, to accept responsibility. You see, people who live with a sense of entitlement, it's like, well, I'm not responsible for my failures. It's the circumstances. Or it's other people. I mean, you know, I love the way Andrew puts it. You know, if you people here would just, you know, get this figured out right, we wouldn't have a problem here. And often what happens is people who are living with a sense of entitlement, they're passively waiting on circumstances to change for them. Or they're waiting on other people to do something that will bring about a positive change in their life. Instead of taking action, reacting responsibly, in fact, acting proactively to bring about positive changes in their life. Now, I want to show you, there's an interesting verse here that I want to take time to do because we've just come through a series called The Miracle of Mercy. And I think it's easy for us, especially if we're dealing with people of entitlement, that we need to understand this principle about personal responsibility. Fascinating passage. Look at Galatians 6:2. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Now, that's the essence of the Miracle of Mercy series we've just gone through right there. That there are people who will sometimes have crushing loads that come down on them, and they just need help. Because they can't handle those loads on their own. And so in love, we try to give them a hand and we try to help lift them up. Carry each other's burdens. But then he goes on and he says this. Now, if anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. That is the entitlement delusion described right there. A person who thinks they've got something together in life and they don't, they're living a life of delusion. Each one, notice, should test his own actions. In other words, what he's really doing about his life. And then he can take pride in himself. Now, you might say, well, isn't taking pride in yourself a bad thing? And I'd say no. In fact, someday we'll do a series here on pride that I'd love to call The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Because there is a good kind of pride. God's Word's describing it here. That when we know we've put in our efforts, when we've done what we can do to be responsible, we're to take pride in that. We're to take pride in how we do what we do. That's a good kind of a pride. But the ugly kind of pride and the bad kind of pride is when we start thinking we're something when we're nothing. And we're not taking the actions we should. Notice he goes on to say, yet I'll underline this next statement, for each one should carry his own load. Now that's interesting, is it not? He starts by saying carry each other's burdens, but then he says, because each one of us now, we've got to carry our own load. You can't expect other people to do for you what you need to do for yourself. Underline that statement. Each one should carry his own load. And the word load there is an interesting word. The New Testament is written in the Greek language. It's the word fortion in the Greek, from which we get our English word portion. God says there's a portion you have to carry of responsibility that you can't slough off on other people. And while we're to try to help carry each other's burdens, we need to be real careful that we don't try to do for other people more than they're really willing to do for themselves. Because that becomes something called enabling, and it's not helpful. You know, in fact, there are some people that what they need more than anything else is not mercy. What they really need is a kick in the seat of the pants to get going. And God's Word says, now you beware of that. Carry each other's burdens, but you don't try to carry somebody's responsibility. There's a great principle here in this next couple of Proverbs. This is really about disciplining children, but there's a principle here I want you to see. It says, discipline your children while they're young enough to learn. If you don't, you're helping them destroy themselves. You know, God's Word says that when you and I aren't paying attention to the responsibilities of life, we're really ruining our own lives. And God says, I want you to learn what discipline is about because that's where you're learning to carry your own load. And then he gives a very practical example of this principle. If someone has a hot temper, for example, underline this next statement. Let him take the consequences. See, life has a way of bringing consequences for the wrong. The life has a way of kicking us in the seat of the pants. And then he makes this comment. If you get him out of trouble once, guess what you'll have to do? You're going to have to do it again. That, my friend, is what we call enabling. And God says one of the things about this entitlement mindset that is so dangerous is people have a refusal to accept responsibilities that they should have. Now, here's a reality principle for you. That is, listen to this. Listen, people don't always do what they should do, but they have a way, usually, of doing what they have to do. Unless you're willing to do it for them, in which case they're probably more than happy to let you. And God says, just watch out for that. And watch out for that tendency within your own self. Now, here's a fourth thing. By the way, how are you doing on this checklist thus far? Are you noticing that some of these tendencies are in all of us? And that, in fact, there may be some zones of our life where we live with an entitlement mentality. Well, here's a fourth one. The avoidance of anything hard or demanding. Now listen, like vampires always stay away from garlic. People with an entitlement mentality avoid hard or demanding things. And if you do that, Houston, we have a problem because life is always hard and demanding. In fact, God's ways are always going to require something hard from us. Always. In fact, His Word could not be clearer that we're to accept hardship as a way of life that's meant to challenge and inspire and motivate us to step up to be something that we aren't yet. It's part of how He actually builds us. Titus 3:14, the Apostle Paul said, all our people, and he's talking about believers, must also, by the way, there's that word must again. You notice that? This is not optional. He says they must learn to occupy themselves in doing good works. And the word works there means good toiling, working hard for their practical needs and not be unproductive. Now, friends, listen. There's nothing meaningful or productive that we'll ever do that won't require something of us. In fact, this is part of why accomplishments feel so good to us. Because we know we've had to overcome obstacles to do them. Sometimes those obstacles within our own selves. And it helps to build that right kind of pride that we have. But our tendency is to laziness, isn't it? We'll take the shortcut if we can. Just remember, there are never shortcuts to anywhere worth your going in life. Never. Here's another one. A sense that rules don't really apply to us. Oh my goodness, this characterizes people with an entitlement mentality today. You see, these exceptional people see themselves as an exception to the rules. So I don't have to wait to be interviewed with all those other schmoes out there. I don't have to stop at red lights or even slow down because it's going to hold up my schedule. I don't have to make commitments and practice spiritual disciplines to really grow in my life, in my faith. See, I can be a starter in the game without ever having to attend practices. You catching on to what we're talking about here? I don't have to make cold calls or set appointments to really be successful. I don't have to do that. And then here's another thing, if you'll write this down. It's blindness to the impact of our behavior on others. See, people who feel entitled in life, they skip over what must be done, and they slough off responsibilities on others. And the fact is, our failure to meet required deadlines or do things we're responsible, we have a duty to do, that always falls on the shoulders of somebody else. Maybe there's somebody sitting here tonight uncomfortable because, in fact, you live with a husband this way, or you live with a wife this way, or you live with a child this way, or as an employer, you have an employee that is this way, or you have a fellow employee that does this, and you resent it every day. You know what I'm talking about. A young man in his 30s was still living at home with absolutely no ambition, and his parents decided to change that picture. And so they told him, you're going to have to start paying rent here. And in fact, you're going to have to start sharing in some of the chores here around the house. And here were his actual words that he said to a counselor that he was talking about. Listen to his words. He said, "Why do they want me to pay rent? I didn't ask to be born. And besides, this will still be their house when I move out someday. I can't pay rent anyway because I don't have a job." Duh. Do you think that's why the parents came up with this great idea? We're going to require you to pay rent. Why? Because you'll have to get a job to be able to do that. I can't pay the rent because I don't have a job. None of the dead-end jobs around here are really worth my time and effort anyway. And there's no reason that I should have to do my own laundry. I mean, Mom has hers and Dad's to do anyway. She can just do mine at the same time. It's no extra work. Do you catch the drift here? And then finally, it's an inability to face up and respond to reality. In fact, that's why I love, for this series, our artist guys here came up with this concept that entitlement, somebody's really, it's like they're wearing virtual reality goggles. It's like somehow they're operating in a completely different reality than reality. And it's true that entitled people live in an unreal world where things just will work out without them having to do any work. And they're out of touch. And they're unable to actually even see that they're out of touch. They're living in such a virtual reality. In fact, I got a kick out of this cartoon of Homer Simpson, who this is how he sees himself after just one day at the gym. I mean, now that's peering into a mirror of virtual reality right there, okay? Proverbs 12, 11, and 28, 19 are very interesting. Look at what they say. The one who works his land Well, notice that word works. By the way, you know the only place where success comes before work is in the dictionary. God says there's something about you applying yourself and working hard that makes you something. That's reality. The one who works his land will have plenty of food, but whoever chases fantasies, you ought to underline that phrase. That's entitlement. Whoever chases fantasies lacks sense. The one who works his land will have plenty of food, but whoever chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. You know what God's word says? That when you and I are unwilling to face the real world, it's like we're living in a fantasy world, and you know what? It's going to lead us to make foolish choices that are always going to leave us empty and unfulfilled. And so you have people who, they'll do something like, you know, they buy a 5 or 6 lotto tickets every week to make sure their ship's going to come in someday instead of putting that money into savings. Or they'll go up to Chuck Chansey and they want to gamble their way out of debt and into financial freedom. That really makes a lot of sense, does it not? Or they keep turning down good jobs because they're still waiting for that person who's really going to offer them what they're really worth. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, the book of Proverbs especially values the word diligence connected to succeeding in life. Now, I hope you have an idea here now of entitlement and what it's like. Because over these next few weeks, we're going to look at different ways of how this is involved in our life. And I really want to finish up the moments we have left in this first message tonight by just showing you the clear antidote that Jesus offers us. Because, you know, it's no mistake that when he calls us to be his disciples, his very calling to us has the antidote for this thing called entitlement. In fact, look at that verse again at the very top of your notes where we started tonight, where Jesus says, anyone who wants to be my follower must deny himself, he must say no to his own selfish ways, and take up your cross, how often? Daily, and follow me. And the one who tries to follow some other rules to get there, he's going to lose what life's about. But if you'll put your life in me, you'll find it. Here's the antidote Jesus gives. Write this down. It's to get liberated at last from your self-defeat. Now, our biggest enemy really is ourselves, is it not? And it's because of this internal issue called sin that's in our life. In fact, sin really is an I problem. Right in the middle of the word sin is the letter I, and sin is the problem of when I try to put myself at the center of my life, and I try to run things my way, and I try to virtually be God. And that gets us in trouble, and it sets us up. It's a glove fit for this issue of entitlement. Romans 16:11 is a passage I came across some years ago, and it really cracked me up when I saw it. I don't know how many times I'd read it, but I'd never really paid that close attention, and I just had to laugh. Paul is greeting people in Romans 16, and then he says this, greetings to those who belong to the Lord in the household of Narcissus. And I had to laugh because I thought, man, there's a lot of them in that household today, man, I'll tell you. Now, people sometimes say, well, what is narcissism? Because we talk about somebody being a narcissist, and when we're talking about entitlement, it really many times involves living narcissistically. Well, this name Narcissus is a perfectly fine Greek name. It happens to be the name in Greek mythology of a young man who was so enamored with his own appearance. He was so in love with how he looked that one day he peered into a pool of water and he saw his reflection and he was so taken by how beautiful he was that he became fixated on it and he continued to stare at his own image until he died. And narcissism is when people are so hung up on themselves that it impairs their ability to do life with other people and function. Now, I want to just caution you about hanging that term narcissist too easily on somebody. That is a very specific mental health kind of an impairment that it frankly takes somebody above my pay grade who's a mental health professional by very specific criterion to say this person is suffering from a disorder called narcissism. It's a personality disorder. So be very careful about ever hanging that on somebody. I hear people calling somebody a narcissist all the time. Frankly, that's a very serious kind of charge to level against somebody. But we can certainly act narcissistically, can we not? And it's possible, even for followers of Christ, to practice this entitlement, narcissism in our own life. In fact, that's really an oxymoron to talk about a follower of Christ who is narcissistic. Yet you know, we've talked about paradoxes, and oxymoron is similar to that. It's like when you take two things and it appears they can't go together, like jumbo shrimp is one of my favorite ways to remember an oxymoron. How can it be both things? It is. You can attend somewhere where there is a small crowd. That's an oxymoron. Somebody can wear tight slacks. We talk about somebody being pretty ugly. How can it be both things? How can you be a self-centered Christ follower? And so that's why Jesus says, you know what? Every day, I want you to understand that when you live with yourself on the throne, you're off on the wrong version of yourself. And to be my follower, you've got to say no to yourself. The Apostle Paul did that. Galatians 2:20, I love how the Message renders this. He says, I have been crucified with Christ. Now, Jesus said, you take your cross, how often?
Daily.
And Paul said, that's the decision that I've made. I want Christ to be primary in my life. And so I've been crucified with Christ, and my ego is no longer central, but Christ lives in me. And the life you see me living isn't mine, but it's lived by faith in Him. It's His life in me. And it's by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. And I'm not going back on that. The Apostle Paul says, you know what? There's been a permanent change. I'm under new management now because I'm living for Jesus. Because listen, you're freeing yourself from yourself when you follow Jesus. Number two, it means to take His pathway to your self-development. Now, Jesus says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and then follow me. It's because He wants to take us somewhere. And He's going to lead you to God's pathway for your greater development as a person. In fact, I love these words that He spoke in Matthew 11:28-30, when He said, come to me, all of you who are tired from carrying heavy loads, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke and put it on you and learn from me. There's that learn from me is the same idea of being a follower, being a disciple. Take my yoke and learn from me because I'm gentle and humble in spirit. And by the way, when we hear the word yoke, we tend to think of like oxen that are yoked together. But in Jesus' day, the most common way that a yoke was used was people put them, and they put them on their shoulders to help them carry things. And what Jesus is saying is, if you'll put my yoke on you, and it's another way of saying, if you'll be my disciple, there are loads I'm going to put on you, but those loads are going to be easier to carry than the ones that you're going to generate in your own life by doing it your way. You see, there is the load of self-development. There's the pain of living a life of self-development, and it's far less painful, far less weighty than the pain of regrets and the pain of self-destruction. One of the things in this series that I hope we can do is learn how to live with the right kind of pain in our life. Because life is painful. But he goes on to say, you'll find rest, for the yoke that I'll give you is easy, and the load that I'll put on you is light. Now, Jesus is saying, you know what? I'm going to lead you into a life of self-development. What does that life look like? Well, if you'll fill in this next sentence, and I'm going to break this down just to make sure you catch these words, because they really are very different. It's choosing, first of all, self-denial. Jesus says, daily, you're to take your cross and you're to say no to yourself instead of coddling yourself. It's living, it's choosing self-discipline in our life. It's choosing a life, in other words, of learning to be obedient to His commands and learning how to control my negative impulses and how to endure hard and difficult feelings and circumstances. How to grow, for example, in steadfastness and learning to stay faithful to Him. That's what it means. It's a life where we're really working at developing as we're walking with Christ, and that's what He'll do with us. You know, poor Andrew, who didn't really take the shot he was given with American Idol. You know, the guy had an okay voice if he'd just been willing to go get himself some voice lessons. And the people who actually come out on top in American Idol, they're the people who are willing to go train themselves how to sing well. They're willing to get into some competitions and have to go through the nervousness and the sitting and the waiting, because that's where you learn to hone your craft and really be the best. Jesus says, that's what I want to do in your life. He's talking about choosing self-investment, where we pour ourselves into something, where we live with commitments to God and others, and a commitment to a course of action with our life, a life of investment. It's a life of self-sacrifice that he's talking about, where we pour ourselves into something. And he says, I want to remind you, if you try to hold on and not have to give yourself that way, you won't find life. But if you'll give yourself, you'll find it. I love those memorable words George Bernard Shaw says in one of his poems, when he says, I'm of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it's my privilege to do what I can for it. Because this is the true joy in life, being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. Being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. That's what Jesus is calling us to do. And listen, those things that you just wrote down, those are going to pull something out of you that wouldn't have been there in any other way. And Jesus says, you go with me, and I'll teach you how to have that. I love an analogy that somebody wrote one time. It's a metaphor of being a follower of Christ, of riding a bicycle. Listen to these imaginative words this author gives. He says, when I met Christ, it seemed as though life was rather like a bike ride. But it was a tandem bike. You've seen tandem bikes, right, where there's two different people riding. It was a tandem bike, and Christ was in the back helping me pedal. And I don't know just when it was he suggested we change places, but my life hasn't been the same since. When I had control, I knew the way. It was rather boring, really, but predictable. It was always the shortest distance between two points. But when he took the lead, he knew delightful long cuts up mountains and through rocky places at breakneck speeds, and it was all I could do to hang on. And even though it looked like madness, he said, pedal. And I worried and was anxious, and I asked, where are you taking me? And he just laughed, and he didn't answer. And I finally started to learn to trust, and I forgot my boring life and entered into the adventure. And when I'd say, I'm scared, he'd reach back and touch my hand reassuringly. He took me to people with gifts that I needed, gifts of healing and acceptance and joy, and they gave me gifts to take along on our journey, my Lord's and mine. And then we'd be off again, and he'd say, hey, give those gifts away. They're only extra baggage anyway. And so I did to the people that we met, and I discovered that in giving, I received. I did not trust him at first in control of my life. I thought he'd wreck it. But he knows bike secrets. Knows how to make it bend to take sharp corners. And he knows how to jump to clear high rocks and how to even fly through scary places. And I'm learning to just shut up and pedal through the strangest places. But I'm beginning to enjoy the view and the cool breeze on my face with my delightful constant companion, Jesus Christ. And when I'm sure I just can't do any more, he just smiles and says, pedal. Have you reached that point of saying, Jesus Christ, I want you to be in charge. Take me where you want me to go. You see, what we're talking about, third, if you'll write this down, is to grab the best shot at your self-discovery you're ever going to have, my friend. There is no better one than the one Jesus is calling you to. He calls you to a journey of self-discovery that you won't find any other way except with him. Only a life of self-discovery that the eternal Son of God can give you. Colossians 1:16 says about Jesus, "For by him all things were made," that includes you and me, "in heaven and on earth, things seen and unseen, all things were made by him," and what? "And for him." You see, Jesus Christ knows what turns your crank. He knows what will fulfill you, because he knows what he had in mind for you when he made you. And that's why he says the best shot you're ever going to have at becoming who you were intended to be is following me. In fact, would you just write that down? You're finding your truest intended self. Jesus says, if you're settling for a life of entitlement, you're cheating yourself and others with a dead-end way of life. But I want you to get lifted out of yourself into something new, and I know how to do that with you.